I think it's okay if you want to be a choreographer before you want to be a dancer, because that helps fuel your vocabulary and shape you as a mover. I definitely have changed as a dancer from starting my career as a choreographer.
Hello and welcome back to Red Lips and High Kicks with your host Lydia Hall. Thank you for tuning in for another episode. And I'm so glad you tuned into this episode because I have a great one for you today. Today I talked to Charlotte Edmonds. Charlotte is a young choreographer from the UK, had her first commission at 16 years old, and God, she's just killing it. She's so in demand and she has this amazing passion and thirst for her work, and it shines off her, honestly, through the laptop, through my little headphones. I was getting so energetic, so full of vigour and life talking to her because she's just so full of wisdom and insight, and it's so lovely to hear. She's got such an original, realistic take on what it's like to be a dancer today, and about this obsession with age that we have and the order and the path that we have to follow that just doesn't exist. And it was so great to share ideas with her and just pick her brain. Honestly, she's so interesting, and you must listen to this one because God, she's great. If you haven't already, give us a follow on Instagram at redlips.highkicks, and you can subscribe below. Please do it now whilst I'm talking and give us a rating. That would be really, really good. But I really hope you enjoy this episode. It meant a lot to me to talk to Charlotte. She's someone I admire massively. And the things she was saying, God, I could relate to. And I just wish I could tell my younger self. And that's the whole message behind Red Lips High Kicks, is just trying to better this world and better this community, because it's a lovely, lovely thing we do, and let's keep it lovely. Have a great day and stay excellent. Hello, Charlie. Thank you so much for joining me today. I am honoured to have you on my show. How are you getting on?
I'm great. Thanks for having me.
It's always exciting talking to a fellow podcaster. I love your podcast. I think it's so important. And it's just so exciting to kind of hear a really different perspective about the arts from a point of view that I obviously don't know. So you've done such a good job with that. And I love listening to it.
Oh, no, it's so, honestly, like, likewise, I'm just so pleased that you are, you know, highlighting the voices within our industry. I've really enjoyed listening to your podcast, and it's great that we can all be so transparent with each other and learn from one another's experiences. I think that's so important, right? Going forward, and I think this time has really helped us understand how we need to nurture one another and support one another. So very, very Amen. Excited to be here. Thank you.
No problem. So my first question, and everyone kind of has quite a different answer to this, is what has this year taught you? Obviously it's been a rough one, but what is your biggest takeaways from it?
What has this year taught me? I would probably say to give people a hug a little more and stop and smell the roses more often than you should, and give yourself and others a little bit more encouragement. Yeah, I just say smile a bit more. This year has told me to smile a bit more because it's made me realize what I love and how lucky I have been to just been able to work with people. Yeah. And it's made me understand how important family and human contact is. Mm-hmm. And take time to stop and smell the roses a little more than normally.
Yeah, for sure. It is.
That's what it's
really. It's that stopping. We rarely get it as dancers and creatives, and to have time to let your mind breathe, let your like creative juices breathe, and let your body breathe is so, so important. And as you know, obviously pandemic is, you know, it's a scary thing we're all facing, but still I think there is a little bit of goodness there.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And going from the beginning, so obviously, you know, you're just killing it. You're in demand. You are really just being your best self. And I'm so excited to have even a small bit in common with you. And we met, I did the Jenny competition. I kind of experienced you, worked with you there, which was so lovely. But also, you know, you came from a British school. You were at the Royal Ballet School, kind of an institution similar to my own. And I'm really kind of interested to talk to you about that transition, because those schools are so focused and you kind of have one outcome really that they want for you. When did you start to feel that you actually were tilting more to the choreography and kind of realized that it wasn't the dancing necessarily where you were headed?
So basically before joining the Royal Ballet School, I loved dancing. I loved creating movement. And even in my school plays at my junior school, they would always say, oh, you know, Charlie, you'll be able to like make a couple of moves up here and there. And I loved that. I loved being a little bit bossy at Christmas and getting all my cousins around the sitting room and making a little dance. And so I suppose I brought that forward into my training at the Royal Ballet School. And obviously there they treat choreography a lot more seriously than, you know, just gathering a few friends in the living room. And I just completely fell in love with it. And I love anything creative. I like curating things. I am very passionate about many different mediums, and choreography seemed to be a great focus for me to kind of accumulate all those passions of mine and create work. So I suppose the Royal Ballet School gave me that opportunity to really hone in on that. And they had this annual competition every year, and I was able to channel those things into that competition and apply annually. And yeah, in the final 2 years of my schooling there, so it's 5 years from year 7 to year 11, I won the competitions, and that kind of gave me a lot of encouragement. And I felt encouraged by my peers and teachers, and Yolande Yorkejo, who was my contemporary teacher at the time and the director of the York Dance Project, and Kevin O'Hare, who's the director of the Royal Ballet. They both were very influential at that point in my life and career, and they still are. But they, all of those people really encouraged me, and I still dance and I still love to dance. And actually, you know, it's been, gosh, what year was that? That would have been 2013 when I left the Royal Ballet School and went to Rombert. And I continued choreographing throughout Rombert as well, and sort of left Rombert after 2 years instead of completing the three to start that residency at the Royal Ballet. But I'm really pleased that it happened in that way. I feel like there was a lot of attention on nurturing female talent, and I was very, and still am, passionate about choreography, and it's definitely shaped the way I move now. I've really gained a deeper understanding into a certain vocabulary of moving, and it opens up my whole horizon of this industry. So yeah, that is a very long-winded answer to that question.
No, not at all. I love kind of hearing the steps involved and the influences. It's really, really interesting. And I love that, what you said, yeah, the horizon. And I think that so can be shaped from a really young age, and having these opportunities in the nurturing early on forms the horizon that you want to explore and live in. And it sounds like, yeah, you were in those places that pushed you in the right direction. It sounds so organic. I love it. What I think so interesting, and you kind of touched upon it there, is that female talent. And I think you are, you know, you're such a pioneer for this. You know, you're young and you're female. They're two things that you don't necessarily associate with choreography. It is changing now. And it's something I actually talked to Ruth Brill about, because she said that's what's so significant about choreography is there's not a route. You can't get a degree or graduate from like a special choreographic school that just makes you like a professional choreographer. You really have to decide in your own path there. Did you ever face a kind of acknowledgement that it would be harder for you as a young female choreographer rather than the people in front of you, or the stereotypes that maybe were established?
I think when I started choreographing, which was, I would say professionally when I started choreographing, which was just over 5 years ago, I think, I was aware that there maybe would have been, or maybe are, obstacles that you face as a female choreographer. And I think I was made aware of that by other wonderful women in the industry who had sort of had that really challenging journey. Mm. And it petrified me, actually, because I was so confused in why is there a difference between gender? And I think nowadays it's, you know, it's not just gender, like why is there an inequality within opportunities? Yeah. And so I think it was really for me, I was just stepping into the mix then. Mm. I was, you know, just coming out of school and really understanding what had been happening. But actually there had been battles for quite some time before that. And I think I was very aware quickly that was the situation. But I think what I feel is 5 years later, I think we are starting to be more cautious and conscious about equal opportunities, and I think the main thing is, though, having said that, you know, no one wants to have an opportunity because it ticks a box. Or
yeah, it's crucial. That's
quite
it.
A few times, yeah, when I've had like a review and I've been part of a program and they say that I'm like the token woman, that really takes away from
it's not
what you want to put forward.
Yeah, and it's just so like not progressive. Like, for goodness sake, how is there any tokens nowadays? Like, where does that come from? What's the norm, you know?
I think that there is an awareness, and I'm so like lucky to be where I am and to have had that support and to have had women that really encourage me and have encouraged me. And actually, coming back to your point about learning about choreography, it is something that you definitely learn as you grow.
Yeah.
But more recently, I decided to start or embark on an MA course in choreography.
Okay.
Because I feel like I've gathered experiences and knowledge, but I wanted to further myself. I wanted to kind of keep improving, or hopefully improve on this craft. And I think that's really important. And many of the choreographers on the course are women. Yeah. So there are people that are doing something about this. And I'm just really pleased that we've seen a shift. And it should continue with that momentum now. This should become the norm. People should be aware of equal opportunities, and it can come from any place, whether you're the director of a company or whether you're someone's peer. I think that encouragement is so, and awareness is so important.
Yeah, no, definitely. And you speak so much truth, exactly how we should go forward. Everyone's responsibility is to further that cause. As you know, we've said, you know, you got your first commission when you were 16 years old. You have done so much in such a short amount of time, but it's all good and well saying this, but it must have been incredibly difficult for you and lonely, I imagine. You know, it's great succeeding so quickly, but you're there maybe before everyone else or before your peers. Were there times that you did feel a little bit lonely, or not necessarily that you'd missed out, but that these weren't actually the plans and the path, you know, quote unquote, that you thought you'd have?
Oh, no, I never look back. I just looked forward.
No, but that's so refreshing to hear, because yeah, I wouldn't have known, putting myself in your shoes. You know, was it difficult to that sort of fight or flight moment?
I think I was really determined, and I just wanted to get involved. I wanted to get in the mix really quickly. I had that amazing platform. I was just kind of in the moment and doing what I loved and wanted to kind of keep going on that trajectory to try and reach my dreams. And so in some ways it was slightly challenging. Obviously I was working with people that are much more experienced than I was, but that was a huge learning curve for me, and definitely shaped the kind of person I am now and the style in which I try and hold the room, the rehearsal room. So I would say, no, I really embraced it. And I think the challenges that you're faced with when you're that age gives you so much resilience. And in fact, I think it was good to kind of understand the industry and sort of meet these people so early on and start to build these connections. Because, you know, even it does take time, and 5 or so years later, although I'm 23, it's, you know, it's taken that time to really kind of nurture those relationships and build on them and continue to build on them. So, I think I was really delighted, obviously,
of course,
to start with my passion.
And I think you kind of touch upon that sort of like the loyalty and the nurturing a connection, a network, or, you know, however you want to see it. But I think it's something that isn't done too much in the dance world, I think, because it is superficial. You know, it's face value, and unfortunately, you know, young people are coming out of schools and they're fresh, injury free, full of energy,
right?
And it can be very hard to feel, you know, build that loyalty in it. Sure. And I think it must be very interesting for you to have had that opportunity to build connections for 5 years, exactly, kind of ahead of the curve, but also, you know, making steps for your future, because you're still so young.
Yeah. Also, having said that, you know, you say so young, I think it's peaks and troughs, you know. Okay. it's not all easy. I feel everyone has a journey and it's not gonna be easy. And although I was very lucky in having that platform, I think you know, there's so much to come, and there's so many, I'm so aware of my peers and of people that I really aspire to be. And I think you don't want to compare yourself to anyone, but you want to just kind of keep in line of where you see yourself, where you want to be. And I think coming back to your point about what has this year brought, you know, I think many people have really reflected on themselves. And like, I started bringing out some choreographies that I created in my first year at the Royal Ballet. And I was really fascinated to sort of hear my instructions behind the camera when we were doing run throughs. And, you know, it's amazing to look back and see where you've gone or how you have evolved, and maybe how your methods have changed according to your experiences, or, you know, something that maybe has happened in your life that you think, right, okay, how am I going to shift that? How am I going to change my ways in the studio to make it a more enjoyable experience? Or, you know, or how will I get the best out of this opportunity? So I found that reflecting is really, really important. Although I say look forward, I don't look back a lot. Actually, during this time, I've looked back a lot. And I think I reflect in the moment pretty much straight after an opportunity. And I'm slightly over analytical, which is sometimes lovely, because you sort of really try and sculpt yourself to try and kind of get the best, or be the best you could possibly be. But sometimes that's also so analytical. But I think it's really great to kind of keep sculpting, keep striving. Yeah. And although it's been a really wonderful journey so far, I think, you know, you just have to kind of keep riding that wave. Keep going through it. So yeah.
I think that's just so also the beauty of the art, is that as we evolve as individuals, our art evolves. And I'm noticing that so much more with my dancing as I'm getting a little bit older. And I call myself young. I'm, you know, a year younger than you, but actually I think, like, if I was 19, I would be like, oh my God, 22, Lydia, come on. You need to be a grown up now. But it's funny. Right. Like, I say young because, again, I also kind of have a similar mindset to you, that I'm not finished yet. I'm far from finished, and there's edges to sand, and there's things to mold, and there's a lot of work still to be done. And I love that about the arts, is that it reflects what we do in, you know, on the stage, in whatever format we're doing it. It really reflects how we are, totally, as a journey we go on as humans.
Yeah, not a finished product.
And I think I have so much respect and, God, like, again, adoration for you with the work that you've done regarding mental health particularly, but also, you know, the climate change issues that you address. And I think that's such a interesting way to get across important messages, but also it gets an audience involved and excited when, you know, it's always about getting new people watching or listening in dance, isn't it? So I think it's a really good, fresh approach to do that. And for you, is that something that is very close to you, or do you feel like it's more of a moral obligation?
Oh, no, I think I always draw on my own experiences and concepts and issues that I'm really passionate about, because I think otherwise, you know, you need something that's going to drive you forward in that work, and you need that personal investment. Mm. So I do feel like, I think using art as a vehicle to portray a message or to potentially change someone's perception for the better is a great tool. And mental health is a really important topic. And obviously Sink or Swim was made 3 years ago now.
Oh, and that, and honestly, sorry to interrupt, but that is one of the most beautiful things I've seen. And, like, I have to say, it stops you in your tracks and you're watching it. And I think the depiction you've done, you know, between Sink or Swim and Frankie Hayward is stunning. It's completely stunning. And honestly, like, big round of applause.
Oh, that was such a wonderful experience. Yeah. And I am so pleased that actually went ahead and happened. I think, it was based on a portrait by Ian Cumberland, who's an Irish artist, and his portrait is called Sink or Swim. And we had a Zoom before I sort of started developing the concept and the proposal. And he was just talking about his a time in his life where he felt like he had hit rock bottom, and the portraits of him fully clothed in a bath. And it really resonated with me. I could definitely relate to that feeling. I could relate to that particular situation of sitting in a bath, which is like a really vulnerable place. And, you know, feeling, just really unsettled and like you'd hit rock bottom. And although there's a huge spectrum of mental health issues, you know, there's severe depression, and you could have sort of a really low day, but I think we all have some kind of empathy with that. And I just hope that it resonated with people. And actually, it was so lovely because I put it up on YouTube, and I still get messages saying this is really helped my mindset, or this has really encouraged me today. And that's exactly what the goal is within my work, is to just kind of help someone or use it as a tool to just be a reflection of society or a support system. I think that's really a really important thing within what we do, and many people do. I think that's what a lot of people within the arts strive to do. And I'm just really pleased that whole experience, working with Frankie, working with Louis Jack, the director, choreographing underwater.
It's exquisite. It is really moving. And mental health within the arts is behind mental health in other aspects massively. And I think only now, really, I feel like there's a bit of a spring of drawing attention to mental health within dancers. And it's stuff like that that just makes it so much more accessible, and you can understand it and you can feel it. And yeah, that empathy that you were saying, it's things like that. And there are steps forward and are so, so important in just bridging the gap between us all as humans and making us all feel a bit better.
Yeah. Exactly. Could have said it better myself.
No, but it is. I assumed it had come from a personal, you can't make something that beautiful without having your heart into it. But like I said, it's just so lovely to see you to putting stuff out there that is real. It's not just tutus and tiaras. There's a space for that, and it's lovely and it's gorgeous, but it's so lovely to see something that is more tangible.
Yeah, I think, and looking at the process, like Frankie, I don't think it was the most glamorous process. Asking a principal dancer of the Royal Ballet if they wanted to kind of plunge into a 6-meter tank.
Is that how big it was? Oh my goodness. I just assumed it was the editing.
No. Oh my gosh. Frankie was absolutely incredible.
Wow.
And, you know, she had full on days, and at the end of her day with just, and Hannah, who was also learning the role, we would just go to a local swimming school in London, a swimming pool in London, and at the end of the day, and they were absolutely incredible. And I remember on the shoot, Frankie actually wasn't a very confident swimmer at first.
Oh, wow.
And then she did a whole minute underwater on the shoot, like performing underwater without taking a breath. And we did have a free diver there to support her. Mm. But I just thought that was a beautiful message within itself, you know, overcoming a challenge and sort of kind of persevering and sharing that resilience. And I just, it was an absolute dream. And especially at that point, it was the first thing that I had produced, which was a huge learning curve, and trying to kind of gather all of that. And then, working with a wonderful team and a composer, and it was wonderful. I could talk about that for so long.
It's so lovely hearing you talk about it. Yeah, the passion in your voice. It sounds beautiful, the whole process as well. And I love that again. Sorry, I'm such a sucker for the arts. I am on team arts. That's what's so lovely about it.
We're both in it then.
Yeah, exactly. it's the fact that the process of creating art sometimes is more important than the art itself. I mean, Sink or Swim was an important piece of art, but it is, the experience is so enriching and nourishing for everyone involved. And I love that you said, you know, that's so interesting to know that Frankie went on a journey herself. And again, yeah, like you said, how reflecting of what the message was, that she also gained that strength. It's beautiful, right. so beautiful. And sort of a similar note, I talked about your podcast earlier, and I'm so excited that something like that is going on. It's so, again, a lovely way of building a community. And I think, you know, there's more community, the better. Sharing 100% is caring. For you, your dyslexia, How do you think that has affected not only your career, but also your experiences within this industry? You know, it's so hard for the average person to survive in this business. We all struggle. But, you know, when you are struggling a little bit more, how do you think that has kind of changed your experiences within it as well?
Yeah, so recently I set up a company called Move Beyond Words with the wonderful Elizabeth Larifian, and we both have dyslexia. Mm. And we've grown up with having dyslexia. Obviously, it's something that you're born with. It's something that never goes away, but it's only associated with children, which is odd.
Yeah.
Because it does live with you your whole life. Mm. And like you said, it's known as a learning disability. Mm. So when you're diagnosed with it, you feel this like heavy weight of,
yeah,
oh,
even
wow.
That word, like diagnosed, it's so clinical, isn't it?
It really is. Yeah, it really, really is. And I think only now, what's the beauty within Move Beyond Words is it's here to amplify the voices of dyslexic artists. And we developed a podcast over the past couple of months, which has been so incredible to hear these inspirational stories by people we really admire, and just hearing how they've managed to overcome the obstacles that they've faced throughout their career. And it's really emotional, actually, that our society has created such a barrier for people with what's known as like a learning disability. Mm. And actually, what we really need to understand is that it's all about nurturing and understanding and educating yourself about diverse minds and why we need diversity within our organizations and institutions is for the benefit of, yeah, what we're trying to create. You know, I think it's also erasing those negative connotations and those stigmas around what dyslexia is, and really highlighting the multi-layers within it. Because although, yeah, I think there are some difficulties with having dyslexia, you know, one is on the academic side of things, which is reading and writing, a real challenge within school. But there are actually a lot of other things that come with that, like processing speeds and trying to articulate yourself, memory lapses. It's really quite layered, like, yeah, I said. But within that, I think I've spoken a lot about dyslexia this year, and it's actually been so, it's really good for me to have done that, because I never spoke openly about my dyslexia because it felt like it's something that you had to be ashamed about. And now that we're sort of starting to be open about that, we're able to share each other's experiences, learn from them and grow from that. And I'm just so delighted that all the guests that came on the podcast, we had Darcy Bustle, Adele Tracy, Steve Chapman, Ashley Woodfield, who's head of press at the Royal Ballet, Laura McCrosty, Kate and Kathy, who are known as the Amazing Dyslexics, and they've just created a wonderful book that shares many professionals who have dyslexia in all their various different careers. Sean Douglas, like all these wonderful, amazing people.
Yeah.
And we've only just touched the surface. And I think the one thing to kind of take away from this is that it's definitely a journey, and it's definitely something that we have to address now and that has to be considered. And whether that's if you're writing a funding application and you need support to write it, or you're writing or applying for a job, you know, I think start to be open with that. And it does take a lot of time and encouragement, because essentially you're revealing your weaknesses before, yeah, people can see your strengths, and that's a real challenge. But I've had to tell you what, it gives you a lot of resilience. And I feel like, you know, you constantly have to problem solve. And I think because at school, I was always expecting, especially with my writing, I was always expecting like a very low grade or a massive red pen all over my writing, or a big fail stamp.
Yeah.
It does really fuel you, because you feel quite bruised. And I think I can relate and speak on behalf of quite a few people that have had that experience in school. So it really makes you, I keep saying resilient, but I want to just like keep saying that because it really does. It really, it kind of gives you that extra layer of skin. And I feel like then through those tough times when you kind of have to fail and learn fast and fail fast and learn even faster, it kind of helps you kind of graft all of that in your career. So I would say, and Darcy said this, you know, she wouldn't be the person that she is today without her dyslexia. And I completely agree with that. I think if people change their mindset to actually see it as a positive and see the benefits with having dyslexia, I think you understand like how much of a part it is to you. And actually, you know, even it is the same within my creative process. I definitely see parts of my dyslexia feeding into the way that I work in the studio. And I think that's wonderful to draw on. You shouldn't neglect that. You shouldn't, you know, suppress any of those traits, any of those things that are happening. So I embrace that and start to use them. I think the more you acknowledge it, the better.
No, and oh God, it's so lovely hearing you talk about it, and you can tell that you're
just going crazy.
It's something like I don't know anything about it, and I even felt I wanted to be careful of the words I was using because I'm not informed enough about it to again, like I don't know these things. So it's so lovely hearing you speak with such passion about it and you know, clarity. And I love that it's so clear for you exactly what it is, what it means, how you feel, and like and the benefits, like you said, and that stigma for sure. It must be very, very difficult, but it's lovely to hear how it fuels you and in a different direction. And what you said about just diverse minds, I mean, oh my goodness, if 2020 has taught us anything, it's just the more voices, the more like different points of view you're having and hearing, the better. Right. And for sure, I just don't understand why you wouldn't encourage environments where there are variety.
Complementary minds and complementary beings. I think that's what you find, what many people probably look for within a creative team or, you know, within their organization. And it definitely has kind of given me these antennae, you know, this radar. You're always on the lookout for these wonderfully creative or individual or mathematical minds that are really going to help enhance your work.
No, it's lovely. And kind of, you know, going from that, and I'm not sure, and correct me if I'm wrong, but were there times from your dyslexia or maybe from dancing that made you feel like you had to quit? Were there moments in your career where you kind of thought about packing it in and going home?
Ooh. I think, no, I never ever thought that's it. I always saw myself having a creative career, an artistic career, and I still feel like I've only just touched the surface. I'd love to do so many more things. But in terms of being a dancer, I think, I mean, looking back at dyslexia at school and in the classroom, it was a little bit of a challenge. I'm only 5 foot, and I was always put at the front of the class, and that was a real challenge when I couldn't remember the exercise. It definitely detracted from what I should have been focusing on, which was improving my technique and really honing in on musicality and performance and the beauty and love that you have for the art. And that really didn't help me. It didn't help me to remind myself why I was doing that. So I think I never thought I'm going to pack up my shoes, but there were definitely hard days. And I just had to keep reminding myself, like, why am I doing this? Where do I see myself going? And I do feel like all those experiences, like I said, I was 5 foot, and there was definitely a period in my training where I wasn't being chosen for the choreographies. I wasn't the aesthetic that the choreographer wanted. I very much felt sidelined, but I never thought, oh, I'm really going to give up because this hasn't worked out to what I wanted it to be like. Again, those experiences shape me, and because they happen so early on, like this is, wow, we, like 15, 16 years old, it must have been, that it made me think, right, okay, if I'm in that position, like how would I manage that differently? How, I never want to make someone feel that way. How can I change my methods to make sure that that doesn't happen? Or what can I learn from what what's happened? What can I take away from this? So, and actually having those difficult moments or not being cast gave me some free time within school. And that's when I would go and find a quiet studio and start choreographing. So essentially that action opened a whole new door and opportunity for me. So I would see, there's always something within something, if you know what I mean.
No, it's these things, I don't know about you, but I'm such a firm believer in everything happens for a reason. And yeah, like you just said, that kind of, literally the time it gave you pushed you towards something else, and you've got to kind of believe in that stuff.
Yeah, and time, I think, you know, giving everyone, I feel like there's a slight expiry date for dancers because it is known to be such a short-lived career. But actually I think there's some really incredible people in our industry that have proven that wrong. And you do need sometimes time, and there has been this very kind of linear path that we've been told that we have to go through. But actually I think it's okay if you want to be a choreographer before you want to be a dancer, because that helps fuel your vocabulary and shape you as a mover. I definitely have changed as a dancer from starting my career as a choreographer. And I've been able to be exposed and to learn from all these wonderful companies all over the world. And that's so exciting. And I definitely feel like, I definitely encourage people to not see this career having an expiry date or a dead end if you don't feel like you've achieved something at the end of school, because life doesn't end there. This career doesn't end there. And sometimes you're made to feel like it does, which I think is really bad. You know, we've got to make sure that, like you said, you know, you were talking earlier about your time in Berlin and about how different countries need to have an awareness about what companies are out there. I definitely felt like coming out of school, I wasn't aware of that. So if we can bring that forward to students so that they realize where their homes could be and where they could explore, I think it's just, it's so, yeah, it's a, it, everyone have a much positive mindset in terms of training.
Yeah,
that there's not kind of one route, there's not one goal, and there's no, you know, there's not, one journey, one route, sort of the same thing. But
yeah,
I think you have to take the time that you need, and if that's starting with a different career and navigating yourself into something else, or sort of balancing both, or, you know, starting in a different country, or, you know, you name it. But I would say, yeah, just keep encouraging that, that openness to find your own rhythm.
Oh God, Charlotte, honestly, that was just like, I could not agree more. My like,
I'm
little
a bit
head.
Of a chatterbox. This is quite dangerous being on a podcast.
I love it. Chat for My head was nodding. I literally just like, yes. I just, everything you said, it's just everything I believe in. And I also felt, you know, I was such a sucker for thinking if I didn't have a job when I left school, I had failed with a capital F. And I just wish someone had told me, like, it's okay, Lydia, like, that's not the finish line. It is a marathon, not a sprint. And I just didn't feel that, like, acceptance of actually the time, like you said, the time you need as an individual, as a creative, as an artist. And it's not always how you think it is. Like, the experiences that are going to better you for your art aren't always working all the time. Like, sometimes you need to go away, sometimes you need to do something completely different, and that will just enrich you for when you get back. And you just have to let yourself go on that journey. And oh my God, that was so obvious in my career, like almost packing it in and going home and working in a pub made me more passionate, more driven, more determined than I have ever been. And I'm so grateful for that experience, because every day I choose dancing, because I didn't for a while. And I just totally agree with everything you said. And that sort of obsession with age can be toxic, can be so, so toxic, and race us and rush us, and maybe makes us more competitive and less, you know, caring. And that's just not an environment that we should be encouraging.
Yeah, you're so, I love how I'm just getting so much energy from you. I love it. No, I'm just like, oh my God, yeah, that's it, yeah. No, but coming back to your point about like working in a different profession, like working in a pub, or work, like I used to work for a street food company when I first went freelance. Mm-hmm. And I think it's important, like with social media now, you are reminded all the time of of your, I don't want to say competitors, but you can kind of see what's happening within the industry.
Yeah.
And you can't help but self-reflect on where you are. But I think as long as you stay in tune about where you want to go and why you're doing this, like you said, like what gave you that encouragement when you were working there to think, right, I've got to be a dancer, how am I going to do this? Mm-hmm. And I think there's been so much discussion at the moment about how artists, especially freelance artists, need to keep supporting themselves, and here we are in a huge pandemic which is completely thrown us, it was hard enough as it was, and yeah. Now even more of a struggle. So I think people are really really valuing, you know, what we do. Yeah. and the reasons why.
No, and I think it's just such an important reminder that it's not over. Like you said, this obsession with age. And I also, I recognize it a lot in myself. I think maybe being a woman and thinking that I have to, you know, have children by a certain age and X, Y, Z, I don't know. But I am also obsessed with that sort of ticking clock, and it's not healthy and it's probably not doing me a world of good, but it's definitely there whether we like it or not. And I think, yeah, that kind of breaking down that wall of actually okay, you might not be running around on your tiptoes anymore because your knees might go, I don't know, but it doesn't mean it's over. There's so many other ways that you can give and receive and keep going.
Yeah. Do you think we're quite aware of our age? Because I feel like there's a lot of celebrities, like I see Brooklyn Beckham getting married and I'm like, oh my gosh, he's 21.
No.
What's going on? Or how is Kendall Jenner an absolute billionaire? And
I know. It's down our throats, isn't it? All the time.
But you are, you know, I do find myself watching Dua Lipa or I don't know, you name it. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I must Google, how old are these? Oh my gosh, he's only 2 years older.
I need to catch up.
It's so bad, but it just, yeah. You just have to remind yourself, you know, we love what we do, and don't compare yourself. Yeah. I've got to take my own advice. Do not compare yourself.
And it's also you have the measuring stick, you get to decide. It's not, no one else is saying that is the official universal rule. If you're not married with two kids and a Dalmatian by 30, you have failed. It's not, you decide the measuring stick. And actually, if I really go, you know what, I'm just going to keep putting myself first and just keep learning and thriving and doing my thing until I'm ready to stop, then that's fine. I just don't think we need to make it harder and create more structure around us that we're just, you know, we're never going to meet those expectations. So let's just relax it.
Yeah, especially us, we're quite lucky. We've been born into a time where you don't have to get married at the age of 20 and have kids by the age of 25. And like you said, and we can be open about our sexuality and our views, and we're able to vote. And so I think, we've got to stop putting too much pressure on ourselves.
I know, exactly.
We're so lucky. But definitely.
No, it's so funny. It does crazy things to you. And that kind of age in school, I think also we process so much. And I think, speak for myself, but I know that so many of my friends as dancers, we just grow up so quickly, and going through all those experiences at such a young age, like you said about being so young at school and being pushed to the front when you weren't ready, it wasn't right for you, but it was what you had to do, so you kind of had to learn. I think it's so interesting that we do that, and I think that's what makes us kind of as unique as individuals and as humans, is that we all grow up so quickly and we kind of have that early wisdom, I want to say. I don't know if that's a correct sentence, I don't know, but that just inner knowledge, because we were pushed into these environments at quite young, sensitive, susceptible years.
Right. Yeah, I think any athletes or anyone sort of in gymnastics, I feel we do start our careers very, very early. And although you may be young, you got to mature very quickly.
Yeah. I always think it's throwing paint on a canvas, that the canvas is, when you're 15, is really small. And it's not till you get older that paint makes a lot more sense, because you have a bigger canvas and you can understand it and process it with an adult brain. But when you're 15, you have a 15-year-old brain.
Yeah, I suppose it's just about learning from the people around you, isn't it? And just, so grateful for everyone who's just being there and keep inspiring yourself, I would say.
Yeah. I mean, we've discussed so much, but my last question would have been, what is your advice for your younger self? But I think your advice to your younger self would be, tune into this episode, because for sure you just unloaded so much goodness.
How have we been talking for this long? I feel like we haven't covered everything. There's so much you can discuss. I feel, what would my advice be to my younger self?
Yeah.
Oh gosh. I would say keep doing what you're doing. You're doing great.
Just keep
going. Keep exploring. Keep growing. And keep looking forward. Just enjoy it, I think. Enjoy it. I feel like we get so bogged into what's happening sometimes that you've just got to remember, like, you've got to get enjoyment out of all the things that you do, and even if it's quite challenging or hard, just keep focusing in. I don't know if that's good advice.
No, I think
my younger self be quite disappointed with that. What would I want to hear? Yeah, I think just and be a bit of a friend to yourself, you know. Be a bit of a friend to yourself, I'd say.
Thank you so much, Charlotte. Honestly, like, wow. I think I'm just going to listen back to this for myself like 7 times because, God, so much goodness. It gets me so excited.
Oh, that's great. Oh, no, thank you so much for having me. It's been really